So this is probably going to start. This is probably going to start now. So that means we're going to have two separate archives, but that's okay. So y'all, you guys are going to have to download two files when you download this archive. There's going to be two links able to send data fast enough. That shouldn't even be an issue. No, hard drive's not full. I got another the other hard drives separately for the archives. I got that a couple months ago. So it didn't have anything to do with that. This is totally on the stream side. This is on the side of the stream. The stream is being attacked, is what I'm trying to tell you. You couldn't hear that because it was cutting out. I don't know if you can even hear me now, but the stream is absolutely under attack. We're absolutely under attack. I don't know if you heard me say that before because it was cutting out, but let me say it again. We are absolutely under attack. They're attacking the streams right now. I guess it was because of the stuff I was just getting into that last article. Like I said, I guess the archive will keep going. It'll just be in two different parts. So I don't know what to do. I've known this is happening for a while, but this is the first time it's been this bad tonight. Now it's saying unable to log into the server. Oh, man. I'm going to have to play some music. We're going to play some music, and I'm going to try and see if I can restart the stream or something. And then we'll come back and try to resume the show here, folks. So just sit tight and stay with us.
You can't lie to your mama. You can't lie to your race. But you can't lie to nobody with that cold steel in your face. And it's... Well, your sister's been blaming everybody. And I don't blame her, man. I guess I'd do the same. If you were my brother, man, I'd probably stand by you. But you ain't, man, so I gotta go my way. And I ain't gonna crawl up on no high horse, 'cause I got thrown off of one when I was young. And I ain't no cowboy, so I ain't going where I don't belong. It wouldn't do you no good to let you know that it damn near killed me too. So I ain't gonna mourn for you, man, now that you're gone.
This is my. We'll be right back. uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
All right, back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. I apologize to our stream listeners. We are currently having some sort of very sophisticated attack. We used to have these all the time on the old stream. I pay more now a month for backup servers and all that stuff, and those are all under attack as well. So I guess it's, you know, when we start getting into that inner earth stuff and Anunnaki stuff, rock wall stuff, that's what they don't like. But the archive should be okay. So we're going to keep rolling. I apologize to our, live listeners cutting in and out, but you'll just have to hit the archive. It'll play more after this. But, that's what the whole intent and purpose of these attacks is, because it gets you thrown off on your train of thought and what you're thinking about, and you get derailed and you can't get back to it. If that was an intentful attack, which I think it was, they definitely, achieved their purpose there. So thank you very much, cocksuckers. Appreciate that, fucking spooks. Oh man. Anyway, theglobalreality.com is our website. Our support and donations lately have been abysmal. We didn't reach our goal last month to be a financier. Please help us out there if you can. Theglobalreality.com. We also have the monthly subscription and the PO box as well. If you absolutely can't use PayPal, and that's how you support our work. Commercial free, uncensored. That's how we do it. Thank you so much. Chapter 9, The Promised Land, Zechariah Sitchin's End of Days. The capture and removal of Marduk from Babylon had geopolitical repercussions, shifting from several centuries of the center of gravity from Mesopotamia westward to the lands along the Mediterranean Sea. In religious terms, it was the equal of a tectonic earthquake. In one blow, all the great expectations by Marduk for all gods to be gathered under his aegis and all the messianic expectations by his followers were gone like a puff of smoke. But both geopolitically and religiously, the greatest impact can be summed up as the story of three mountains, the three space-related sites that put the promised land in the midst of it all: Mount Sinai, Mount Moriah, and Mount Lebanon. Of all the events that follow, the unprecedented occurrence in Babylon, the central and most lasting one was the Israelite exodus from Egypt, when, for the first time, sites that until then were the gods alone were entrusted to people. When the Hittites who took Marduk captive withdrew from Babylon, they left behind behind political disarray and a religious enigma. How could that happen? Why did it happen? When bad things happened to people, they would say that the gods were angry. So what now that bad things happened to gods, to Marduk? Was there a god supreme to the supreme god? In Babylon itself, the eventual release and return of Marduk did not provide an answer. Karain Dash. But little else is known about them or their original language. To this day, it is not clear where they came and why their kings were allowed to replace the Hammurabi dynasty circa 1660 BCE and to dominate Babylon from 1560 BCE until 1160 BCE. Modern scholars speak of the period that followed Marduk's humiliation as a dark age in Babylonian history, not only because of disarray it caused, but mainly because of the paucity of written Babylonian records from that time. The Kassites quickly integrated themselves under kings known as Hyksos. Here, too, it is not certain who they were, from where they came, or how it was that their dynasties were able to rule Egypt for more than two centuries. But the dates of this second intermediate period, with its many obscure aspects, parallel the dates of Babylon's slide from the peak of Hammurabi's victories, 1760 BCE, to the capture and resumption of Marduk's worship in Babylon, circa 1560 BCE, is probably neither accident nor coincidence. Those similar developments at parallel times in Marduk's principal lands happened because Marduk was hoist by his own petard. The very justification for his claim to supremacy was now causing his undoing. The petard was Marduk's own contention that the time for his supremacy on earth had arrived because in the heavens the age of the ram, his age, had arrived. But as the zodiacal clock kept ticking, the age of the ram started to slowly slip away. The physical evidence from those perplexing times still exists and can be seen in Thebes, the ancient Egyptian capital of Upper Egypt. I believe that's where the Temple of Hathor is. Apart from the pyramids of Giza, the ancient Egyptians called it the city of Amon, for it was to this unseen god that those temples were dedicated. The hieroglyphic writing and the pictorial depictions on their walls, obelisks, pylons, and columns glorified the god and praised the pharaohs who built it, enlarged and expanded and kept changing the temples. It was there that the arrival of the age of the ram was announced by the rows of ram-headed sphinxes. And it is there that the very layout of the temples reveals the secret quandary of Egypt's followers of Ra, Amon, Marduk. One time, visiting the sites with a group of fans, I stood in the midst of a temple waving my hands as a traffic policeman. Amazed onlookers wondered, who is this nut? But I was trying to point out to my group the fact that the Thebes temples, built by a succession of pharaohs, kept changing their orientation. It was Sir Norman Lockyer who, in the 1890s, first grasped the significance of this architectural aspect, giving it a rise to a discipline called archaeoastronomy. Bear with me, folks. I'm stuttering a little bit. Just I'm still getting over this cold. I'm getting over it. It's just like Solomon's Temple in Jerusalem and the old St. Peter's Basilica at the Vatican in Rome faced permanently east, welcoming sunrise on equinox day year after year without reorientation. But temples oriented to the solstices like Egypt's temples in Thebes or China's Temple of Heaven in Beijing needed periodic reorientation because due to precession where the sun rises on solstice day shifts ever so slightly over the centuries, as can be illustrated by Stonehenge, where Lockyer applied his findings. The very temples that Ra Marduk's followers had erected to glorify him were showing that the heavens were uncertain about the durability of the god and his age. Marduk himself, so aware of the zodiacal clock when he had claimed in the previous millennia that his time had arrived, tried to shift the religious focus by introducing the star religion of Marduk is Nibiru. But his capture and humiliation now raise questions regarding the unseen celestial god. The question, until when will the age of Marduk last, changed to the question, if celestially Marduk is the unseen Nibiru, when will it reveal itself, reappear, and return? So again, as we said the other night, what we've been told as the return of the, we're all going to be his worshipers. Hey, I said it once, I said it again. Somebody call Snake Plissken. Get fucking Snake Plissken on the phone. I know he wasn't Snake Plissken in the Stargate movie, but still. Get that fucker on the phone. Tell him we got Roz coming back. We need the big guns brought out for this. Oh, man. As unfolding events showed, both the religious and the geopolitical focus shifted in the middle of the second millennium BCE to the stretch of land that the Bible called Canaan. As the return of Nibiru, Marduk, started to emerge as the religious focus, the space-related sites also emerged into sharper focus, and it was in the geographic Canaan where both the landing place and the erstwhile Mission Control Center were located. Historians tell the ensuing events in terms of the rise and fall of nation-states and the clash of empires. It was circa 1460 BCE that the forgotten kingdoms of Elam and Anshan, later known as Persia, east and southeast of Babylonia, probably no coincidence that about at the same time a powerful state arose in the Euphrates region where Mary had once dominated. They're the biblical Horadites. Scholars call them Hurrians. Formed a powerful state called Mitanni, the weapon of Anu, which captured the lands that are now Syria and Lebanon, and posed a geopolitical and religious challenge to Egypt. That challenge was countered most ferociously by Egypt's pharaoh, Thutmose III, whom historians describe as an Egyptian Napoleon. Intertwined with all that was the Israelite exodus from Egypt. That period seminal event, if for no other reason than due to... Listen to that. Let me say that one more time. Let me slow it because I said that kind of fast. Its timing was not accidental. For all those developments related to the issue of who shall control the space-related sites when Nibiru's return will occur. Nibiru being Ra or Marduk. So, my God, they just wrapped up, that just wrapped up all religion, everything you need to know about all world religion right there, didn't it, folks? Intertwined with all that was the Israelite exodus from Egypt. That period's seminal event, if for no other reason than due to its lasting effects to this day on mankind's religions, social and moral codes, and the centrality of Jerusalem. Its timing was not accidental. For all those that may have the divine right to rule want to be in those positions of power to control those space-related sites when Nibiru, a.k.a. Ra, Marduk, returns. So I guess whoever controls those sites gets to have some semblance of power, and whoever doesn't is going to be, you know, crushed and seen as inferior. So, well, I get it now. My God, that just makes the whole fucking world system become a lot clearer, doesn't it? That's why they want to rebuild the temple and all this shit, man. That's why all these right-wingers and, my God, Tim LaHaye and the CMP, and all this, and this is why they tell you not to look into this stuff. All this religious nonsense and chosen people stuff has been about who gets to be in control when the God comes back. And they water it down and don't give you the context. My goodness. That's just all so clear to me now, folks. As was shown in previous chapters, Abraham did not just happen to become a Hebrew patriarch, but was a chosen participant in major international affairs in the places where his tale took us, Ur, Haran, Egypt, Canaan, Jerusalem, the Sinai, Sodom, and Gomorrah, were principal sites of the universal story of gods in Exodus as just an Israelite story, clearly placed in it the context of Egyptian history and the international events of the time. The Hebrew Bible opens the story of the Israelite Exodus from Egypt in its second book, Exodus, by reminding the reader that the Israelite presence in Egypt began when Jacob, who was renamed Israel by an angel. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Like Ram, Israel, Emmanuel. And his other 11 sons joined Jacob's son Joseph in Egypt in 1833 BCE. The full story of how Joseph separated from his family, rose from being a slave to the rank of a viceroy, and how he saved Egypt from a devastating famine, is told by the Bible. Those times were also gone. A new dynasty came into power, and there arose a new king over Egypt who knew not Joseph. Accordingly, or rather accurately, the Bible describes the change of government in Egypt. The dynasties of the Middle Kingdom based in Memphis were gone, and after the disarray of the second intermediate period, the princes of Thebes launched the dynasty of the New Kingdom. Indeed, there arose entirely new kings over Egypt, new dynasties, and a new capital, and they knew not Joseph. Forgetting the Israelite contribution to Egypt's survival, a new pharaoh now saw danger in their presence. Biblical scholars have assumed all along that the feared nation of the children of Israel were the Israelites sojourning in Egypt. But this is in accord with neither the numbers given nor with the literal wording in the Bible. Exodus begins with a list of the names of Jacob and his children who had come with their children to join Joseph in Egypt, and states that all of those who descended from the loins of Jacob, for the identity of that pharaoh and of the pharaoh's daughter who raised Moses as her son, the narrative's wording record the pharaoh's fear that at a time of war, the Israelites will join our enemies and fight against us and leave the land. It is not a fear of a fifth column inside Egypt, but of Egypt's indignant children of Israel leaving to reinforce an enemy nation to whom they are all related, all of them being, in Egyptian eyes, children of Israel. But what other nations of children of Israel and what war was the Egyptian king talking about? Thanks to archaeological discoveries of royal records from both sides of those ancient conflicts and the synchronization of their contents, we now know that the New Kingdom pharaohs were engaged in prolonged warfare against the Mitanni. Starting around circa 1560 BC with the pharaohs Amosis, continued by the pharaohs Amenophis, Thutmosis, and Thothmosis II, and intensifying under Thutmosis III through 1460 BCE, Egyptian armies thrust into Canaan and advanced northwards through against Mitanni. The Egyptian chronicles of those battles frequently mention Naharin as the ultimate target, the Khabur River area, which was in the Bible called the western land of the two rivers, the Aram Naharaim. In principal urban center, its principal urban center was Haran. It was there, biblical students will recall, that Abraham's brother Nahor stayed on when Abraham proceeded to Canaan. It was from there that Rebekah, the bride of Abraham's son Isaac, came, and she was in fact the granddaughter of Nahor. It was to Haran that Isaac's son Jacob, renamed Israel, went to find a bride and ended up marrying his cousins, the two daughters, Leah and Rachel of Laban, the brother of his mother, Rebekah. These direct family ties between the children of Israel, i.e. of Jacob, who were in Egypt, and those who stayed on in the Naharaim are highlighted in the very first verses in Exodus. The list of the sons of Jacob who had come to Egypt with him includes the youngest in the Kabur River area were called Ben-Yamins, where the name Benjamin comes from. The name of Joseph's full brother was thus a Midianian tribe name. No wonder, then, that the Egyptians considered the children of Israel in Egypt and the children of Israel in Midiani as one combined nation greater and mightier than us. That was the war the Egyptians were preoccupied with, and that was the reason for the Egyptian military concern. Not the small number of Israelites in Egypt if they stayed, but a threat if they left the land and occupied territory to the north. And the purpose of the Exodus, in the words of the biblical God himself, to keep his sworn promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to grant to their descendants as an everlasting heritage. Exodus 6, book 4, 8, from the brook of Egypt to the river Euphrates, the great river, the whole of the land of Canaan, the western mount, the land of Canaan, and Lebanon, from the desert to Nep. See, this is very, it's very interesting because this is the same type of stuff that, that you had Zeus by Queen Semiramis, this big stone in Iran. No shit. The promise to Abraham was renewed at the Israelites' first stop at the Har Ha-Elohim, Mount of the Elohim Gods. And the mission was to take hold, possess the two other space-related sites, which the Bible repeatedly connected, as in Psalms 48:3, calling Mount Zion in Jerusalem Har Kadashi, my sacred mount, and the other on the crest of Lebanon, Har Zaphon, the secret north mount. The Promised Land clearly embraced both space-related sites. Its division among the 12 tribes granted the area of Jerusalem to the tribes of Benjamin and Judea, and the territory that is now Lebanon to the tribe of Asher. In his parting words to the tribes before he died, Moses reminded the tribe of Asher that the northern space-related site was in their land. Like no other tribe, he said, they will see the rider of the clouds soaring heavenwards. Deuteronomy 33:26. Apart from the territorial assignment, the words of Moses imply that the site would be functional and used for a soaring heavenward in the future. Yeah, fucking spaceport. Clearly and most emphatically, the children of Israel were to be the custodians of the two remaining space-related sites of the Anunnaki. That covenant with the people chosen for the task was renewed at that greatest theophany on record at Mount Sinai. It was certainly not by chance that the theophany occurred there from the very beginning of the Exodus tale, when God called out to Moses and gave him the Exodus assignment, that place in the Sinai Peninsula occupied center stage. We read in Exodus 3:1 that it happened at the Mount of the Elohim, the mountain associated with the Anunnaki. The route of the Exodus was divinely determined, the Israelite multitude having been shown the way by a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. The children of Israel journeyed into the wilderness of Sinai on the Mount Sinai in full view of all the people. Yeah, the motherfucker came out of the goddamn spaceship. I mean, ever since I was a kid, dude, every fucking year on Easter, what do they show on TV? Every fucking year, no fail. Ten Commandments, right? Okay, this year, if it comes on TV, watch that shit. And watch the part where Moses goes to get the fucking Ten Commandments, which, by the way, studies came out several years ago saying that he was most likely on DMT when all that happened. Yeah, there was all the alkaloids for it around there. So he, you know, had some fucking DMT and was tripping balls. But ever since I was a little kid, man, when he's going up there, they show Mount Sinai and it's like, you know, old technology, but it's glowing red and smoking. It looks like there's a fucking spaceship up there. I can remember when I was a little kid going, look, there's a spaceship up there. Shut up. You know, smack him side of the head. It's not a goddamn spaceship. Oh, man. You know, it was a goddamn spaceship. So many things. There were so many things that I have such as memory, but there were so many things when I was a kid, I used to say, hey, you know, Pat Sajak's drunk on TV. No, he's not drunk. This is a good show. Smack to grown-ups when I was a kid, and they'd be like, you're stupid. What would make you think that? That's retarded. And then I get older and find out, wait a minute, I was right about that. Remember, kids, if there are any kids out there listening to this show, which I doubt it, but if there are kids, remember, adults don't always know everything. They may tell you they do. They're wrong. They don't always know everything. Don't listen to them. If you think you're right about something, stand up for, you know, stand up for yourself. It was at this same mount that Gilgamesh, arriving at the place where the rocket ships ascended and descended, had called Mount Mashu. It was with the same mount that the double doors to heaven to which Egyptian pharaohs went in their afterlife journey to join the gods on the planet of millions of years. It was the mount ascribed the erstwhile spaceport, and it was there that the covenant was renewed with the people chosen to be the guardians of the two remaining space-related sites. After the Israelites were preparing after the death of Moses to cross the Jordan River, the boundaries of the Promised Land were restated to the new leader, Joshua. Embracing the locations of the space-related sites, the boundaries emphatically included Lebanon. Speaking to Joshua, the biblical God said, now arise and cross this Jordan, thou and all this people, the children of Israel, unto the land which I do give to them. Every place the soles of your feet shall tread upon have I given to you, just as I have spoken to Moses, from the desert to the Lebanon, and from the great river, the river Euphrates, in the country of the Hittites, unto the great. One must point out a caveat inserted by the biblical God in regard to the Promised Land. The boundaries running from the wilderness in the south to the Lebanon range in the north, and from the Euphrates in the east to the Mediterranean Sea in the west, were reconfirmed to Joshua. These, God said, were the promised boundaries, but to become an actual land grant, it had to be obtained by possession, akin to the planting of the flag by explorers in the recent past. The Israelites could possess and keep, you'll be able to hear it now. I got to get off of here, man. That's all I can do tonight because I've got to be up early and on for 2 hours with Henry Palmgren tomorrow. But thanks to everybody out there for being patient. We're definitely under attack again. I don't know when this is going to stop. Hopefully they're not going to be doing this when I'm doing my interview tomorrow. It's going to piss me off. Frustrating. Anyway, support us if you can, folks. We need some support this week. Donations have been slim lately. And we need your help if we're going to continue. So please go to my website, theglobalreality.com, make a donation, the chip in banner, the donate button today, and help us out if you can. We'll see you tomorrow. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you, and you guys have a good one. Take care.